Ticket recording number 5703C11ACC. A lecture by L. Ron Hubbard from the 17th Advanced Clinical Course, entitled Summary of Techniques. Copyright by L. Ron Hubbard, 1957, with all real performance rights reserved. And this is the 11th lecture of the 17th ACC, 11 March 1957. Actually, it is the year 7 A.D. You know that, don't you?
Yeah.
Year 7 after Dianetics. Well, anyhow, let me talk to you on this memorial occasion. If you don't know what the occasion is, we'll think up one. I'm going to talk to you on a summary of techniques. As you know, we have recently had several interesting techniques which gave us a considerable alteration of case and which did quite well. And it is time that we fitted all of these techniques from way back when up till now into one small little yellow basket. The keynote of existence happens to be the fundamentals of life in its reaction to other life and the physical universe. That is an awful mouthful, but that is an awful simple statement of it. Now, life is capable of creating universes, and life is capable of many considerations. In fact, it can generate considerations and then get them agreed upon and thus form a mechanical modus operandi for mutual existence in any universe. A universe is a figure of two, never a figure of one. It takes two to make a universe. That has any endurance or randomity. When people consider that they are the only one, which is kind of basically true, because their acquaintances with one another come about through space and mass. But when one considers himself only one, he therefore has a very vast difficulty. He cannot understand himself since he has no datum of comparable magnitude. See the logics of Dianetics. And thus we get this prevalent condition known as the only one. And that's about the worst condition there is, but is always to some tiny degree present. One being self is always more aware of self and the impingements on self than he is of the other life. Now, it's very easy to become more aware of the other's mass or form than the other. Very simple. You really need to be more aware. You become more aware of somebody's form than he himself. Every now and then, as you come up the line, you upset people. But it is so unusual for this cross experience to occur that whole technologies are built out of telepathy, mind reading, and all of this sort of balderdash, which is quite interesting. All you have to do is be more aware of mass than someone else, and you'll be more aware of his mass than he is. Once you perform the mechanisms of one, what will resolve this case? Bang. Somebody walks in, they have some pressing problem, you have never been informed concerning it, and you immediately tell them what their problem is. A Scientologist could find nothing easier than to become a Swami. Swamiing, however, is interestingly enough seldom based on this premise, and therefore Swamis go by the board since, again, they do not understand themselves. They do not understand how this is done, and therefore they make mysteries out of it, and they get stuck in their own mysteriousness. They try to make a game of great mystery out of it for other people. We have a denial of knowledge, therefore, from one person to another, which is operative simply on these basic fundamentals, that everyone is a little more aware of himself than he is of other lives. It's rather difficult to become aware of another life. But it is very simple to become aware of another form. And where that life is using form to any degree, even if it's just an engram bank, then it becomes very easy to understand that other life form. Differentiate, would you please. To be another thing is only possible by postulating that you are yourself, somebody else. But never having been somebody in the first place, this, of course, is erroneous. You can always mock up a self, which is a life, and so on. But things are, to a very, very remarkable degree, insulated from one another, quite remarkably so. That is, as things. But the moment they acquire mass, inhabit a mutual space, then by their forms, you shall know them. Now, we have, entering into all this, a condition of mind in a thing, which we call a game's condition. Now, there's nothing wrong with being in a game, but when we say game's condition, we normally mean in Scientology an unknowing game's condition. One does not know that he is in a game's condition. One does not know thoroughly what he is doing, and he is doing what he's doing rather compulsively, and that compulsive thing is he's playing a game. Therefore, we assess the various factors contained in games, and then we get a very perfect picture, a picture which we have no reason whatsoever to change, correct, alter in any way, and that is the description of a game's condition. No effect on self, total effect on somebody else. Self can have, the other fellow can't have. All of these, many of these conditions, which are found in Scientology fundamentals, are brought in some of the paths, are a remarkably perfect picture of what a thing is doing. That we call a game's condition. An individual's ability to play a game declines to the degree that he is playing games unknowingly. Quite interesting. Very, very pertinent to an auditor's wherewithal and weapons is that fact, his ability to play a game, declines in direct ratio to his unknowingness about the games he is playing. The simple example of that, a fellow who is in the middle of a football game finds it rather difficult to play baseball. And it's that cornerly stupid. You just can't be playing one game all out and play another game too. But when you're playing a game all out, you either know it or don't know it. And it's the fellow who doesn't know he's playing the game that is in trouble. He's in a football field. He doesn't know where he is. Some fellows are in the middle of World War I, still playing World War I, while sitting at an office desk. It's not possible. He's in the textile business, and yet he is playing World War I. What will he do to his opponents? He's liable to wound them. Who are his opponents? Well, his secretary, his salesman, so on. An auditor can look over somebody and tell at least that he is unknowingly playing some kind of a game. Now, the first thing that we summated here on this subject was a service facsimile, the use of illness, and so on. Now, that is still an adequate statement, but it is not anywhere near as fundamental as this other statement. Yes, he has uses for it and so on, but that is extensional beyond this point. The marks and scars which he is wearing, the pains and psychosomatics from which he is suffering, all of them stem from this unknowing Gabe's condition. But he doesn't have any of these. These are the things he has administered to his opponents and has failed to make stick. They had to stick someplace, so he's got them. And the opponent, to that degree, is still there, so close to him that he believes the opponent is himself. You get a closure of space. Now, when we add this to Gabe's conditions, we understand things a great deal better. And that is the basic concept which has been delivered unto Thetans by people who dream these things up. People get anxious about control and so on, and they dream up many mechanisms in order to subordinate life around them. And that is self as a white knight, the other fellow is a black. This is standard. Why do you suppose the heroes in books are always such good ethical fellows? Well, that's so the reader will conceive some affinity for the hero, since he thinks of himself as a good ethical fellow. And why are the villains always such black dogs? Well, that's so he'll conceive the villain as the other fellow. The cowboy in the white hat, the cowboy in the black hat. Life responds this way. There isn't anyone around who thinks of himself as a thoroughgoing being. He may say that he does, but he doesn't. When he says that he is, or thinks privately that he might be, he is simply in a terminal closure, the other terminal now being absent, with some former opponent, since the opponent is always an enemy, and when he has closed his terminals that closely with opponents, that he himself thinks of himself as the opponent, we have a full game in view, with no space between the sides. Fellow thinks of himself as the enemy. You can always get a reaction from a pre-clear by asking him for ways and means to fight himself, or to spot something that's fighting itself. It's quite interesting because at once he will cognize that you were talking about him. A person would have to be in very deep apathy to no longer feel that he was fighting himself. That's a very apathetic condition. I've seen some fellows who were at peace with the world and who were in terrible condition. Only they weren't at peace with the world at all. There was no world. They handled the problem by going completely out of communication with everything and making everything nothing, and themselves nothing too. And in this sort of a vacuum, they could live, quote unquote. Only that isn't living. You find that person is very prone to illness and is fairly hypnotic. So if we take any of these things we address, who are walking these forms around, we see at once a collection of old battlefields. That's about the best definition you could give any pre-clear. A pre-clear is a collection of battlefields complete with opponents. How do you get that way? Well, when affinity goes down, so goes space. But more importantly, having this went with the boards, communication went with the boards, control went with the boards. These things all gone now, leaves the person the other fellow. Thus we have schizophrenia, dipsophrenia, nasty swear word that can be leveled at people. Now, the highest thought in psychiatry today, although we're not interested in this particular sphere of mental reaction, it's very interesting that men would specialize in being interested in sick minds when they knew nothing about minds. I think this is one of the fabulous things. Something that hardly anybody really confronts directly. Well, what is all this emphasis on sick minds? Why are we trying to understand sick minds? Well, the funny part of it is that we don't understand anything about minds, or didn't, before Dianetics, Scientology. And therefore, we had people operating from a hidden standard. They understood all about well minds. That was the hidden standard. It was the sick minds they were worried about. Balderdash. No time on this planet within written history has man understood what a mind was, or even a spirit. Therefore, any emphasis on sick minds is rather peculiar. But the psychiatrist specializing in the subject of sick minds, whatever that is, now has a common denominator of cure, and he has swung to this, and all of modern psychiatric thought, as derived from the Russian texts, has given him just this, that man is seeking to punish himself. This is modern psychiatric thought. And that the cure for this is to punish the sick person. That is a matter of record, by the way. That is not something I'm just saying out of a hat. Electric shock and all other such mechanisms are simply dedicated to punishing people. That is how a Thetan got that way in the first place. Punishment. It wasn't punishment, it was simply opponents. And you did things to opponents. And then closed terminals and became your own opponent and so forth. But psychiatry has smelled this one out, and I consider this rather excellent on their part, except they didn't know what to do with it. I want to call your attention, just this one little item. They are dramatizing an unknowing game's condition and justifying it. They are punishing their fellow man. And an insane person cannot defend himself well. So he's a person that can be punished. So the psychiatrist is punishing him. There's really no more thought to it than this. And this will occur to you as being quite remarkable when I tell you that at Bedlam, that was the highest common denominator of psychiatric thought. That people were trying to punish themselves, and the best treatment was to punish them. 200 years ago. And today, in the most modern sanitarium in the country, this is the highest thought. Psychiatry has not changed its mind since the first days that it became psychiatry and Oriental torture first moved into the Western world. It has not changed its mind or its theory. Perhaps it is only a renewed honesty on their part that make them come forward now and make this as an official statement, which is what it is. There's been no change. A person who is insane is trying to punish himself. This is a very easy thing to observe. Except it doesn't come in or bring into view a dozen observable mechanisms, such as catatonic schizophrenia. The person isn't doing anything in catatonic schizophrenia. That is what is wrong. And this is a very, very incurable type of insanity. Now, you could mess it up by saying, well, a person is making himself liable to punish himself. Well, I suppose you could say that. But the psychiatrist doesn't. This highest common denominator of psychiatric thought is all-embracing of everything except 75% of the cases he confronts. But it is all that he thought, or a medico thought, a couple of 100 years ago. And it is all that he thinks today. The person is trying to punish himself, so therefore the cure is to punish him. Thus the advance of the understanding of the mind. It has taken these huge strides forward from point A to point A. Man will always believe this. He has believed this on the whole track. Space opera believed this. And the common denominator it is, I must have some excuse to punish my fellow man. I must have an excuse to punish him. So we say he's punishing himself, therefore we have the perfect excuse. This is Q&A completely. All right? Therefore, we don't find that too much has been learned or is known about the mind. I'm not being specious now. They actually don't go any further than this today. We have the cowboy in the white hat, the cowboy in the black hat. And the cowboy in the white hat is yourself, and the cowboy in the black hat is the other fellow. And that's about all there is to that. See, it's that simple. I find human beings rather easy to get along with, for the excellent reason that I do not and will not always automatically assume that they are cowboys in black hats. I know that they're cowboys in white hats. As a result, have minimum amount of trouble with anything that is wearing flesh and blood. Sometimes have a little bit of trouble with some organization that doesn't have anything but paper in its veins. Psychological and so forth. These are sort of organisms or engrams which have gotten started in the society. They're a little bit hard to erase. You take anything that has a life form actually sitting in it, and your automatic assumption that that person is bad, that that person is poorly motivated, and so forth, is simply an automatic assumption on your part which reaches the whole length of the track. It is that assumption on which life premises all its games. It has to believe that it can be victorious. And one of its mechanisms is that other people are less powerful, less knowledgeable, less able. This assures oneself of some victory. So it's an automatic assumption of victory. People think that it isn't an assumption of victory at all. The funny part of it is, if one life form loses the length and breadth of this whole universe, to some degree, all other life forms will lose. That's a fabulous thing. So we have the mechanism of the trap. And the mechanism of the trap is simply, the other fellow is a bad fellow. Sin is sin, and it's all bad over there. And if a fellow believes this implicitly enough, he will fixate enough and withdraw while still holding on to enough and enter the game sufficiently strongly that he cannot escape. He will not take on these other beingnesses. They're all bad, therefore it fixes him in his own beingness. And his own beingness is, of course, a lie. Now, let us just look forward from these great simplicities, and they are very, very simple, to much more complex things, the techniques of Dianetics and Scientology. In the past, we have had many processes which were quite interestingly complex, efficacious, and so on. And of recent months, I've started repeating myself here and there unknowingly. I've forgotten about it. And one of the fine services performed by such people as the director of training and director of process and so on, one of the things that they do best these days is to say, "Why, Ron, you said that last August." I just told them something's brand new and they say, "I said that last August." Well, I remember when you first came out with that. That was in 1953. It's quite remarkable. We're repeating many of the things to be found in the creation of human ability. Now, don't you throw these things aside, I'm telling you, because what I'm telling you is a summation. These things are understood. They aren't isolatedly set up just as something that one dreams up. They are understood and are now interrelated rather well. There are only a few processes that have any importance at all. Very few. These processes come under the heading of, and really the simplest form of, communication, havingness, and control. They belong on the ladder to that degree. Now, any one of these processes by itself, if it could be used by itself, would discover therapeutic results. Although why we use the word therapeutic, I'm not quite sure, since we are simply handling minds, and we are assuming again that minds are sick. Well, let's just assume that they're less able and less happy than they might be, and therefore we should use the word probably advantageous. All right. Now, there are communication, havingness, and control, but where does this lead us? Well, let's take bottom first. We talk a lot about communication. You can talk somebody's ears out. Communication is a way of as-ising things. It makes space. There's all tremendous numbers of things you can say about communication, and amongst these, the people believe that it as-is is havingness. One of the things, the reason that they think it as-is is havingness, and thereby make it as-is havingness, is therapy like that shouldn't be let go to all these cowboys in the black hats. It's too good for them. So one has to dream up a curve on this and say that communication as is happiness. Otherwise, it would be a total process. Do you understand? But communication with what? Well, I'm afraid we have to have some mass before we can have a with what. So if communication as is mass, then any communication with a mass will give us nothing to communicate with, so that somebody's got to figure it out, so the communication utilized gives us no communication, which is simply no more, no less than an operation. Somebody has pulled one there. All right. Now, let's take this thing called control. The component parts of control are start, a change, and stop. We know that. When you control something, you're going to have to make it start, change, and stop. Well, now, you can control the thought of somebody rather easily only if you can control their masses. It's quite remarkable. This was fundamental in Dianetics. We control the mental image pictures, the masses of the mind. And by that control, we did some interesting things to people. But just by talking to somebody and asking him to change his mind, we did not succeed very well. We've never succeeded very well. Now you say some logical concatenation of speech can serve to convince somebody and change his mind. Well, here's the trick. You must take what he already knows and proceed to a new assumption over the bridgeway of what he already knows and get him to accept it, since it's premised upon what he already knows and it fits in a logical pattern with what he already knows. Or you can simply tell him what he has already known, what he already knows, but that he's forgotten. You can tell him what he has forgotten, and this will seem to him like truth. In other words, you could pursue this concatenation of data, all of which he already knows by his own experience to be true. In other words, he's agreed with it and so forth. And put another datum on the end of it as the logical conclusion of all of this data. Or you can simply go back and pick up all of the logs in the bridge, which he has already agreed on. You can take any one of those logs, re-stimulate it, and say there's a log here. The fellow says, yes, I'm thinking it over. Yes, there is. What's he done? He simply brought into view something with which he has already agreed. Now, in either case, let me assure you, no independent change of mind has been undertaken by you. Both actions are subordinate to his existing experience.
Quite fascinating, isn't it?
In other words, unless he knew something, you can't teach him anything. Now, you can show him how you make cellophane and then show him that one more step can now be added. And he'll agree that this new step was probably necessary, you see. Provided he's agreed on all parts required to make cellophane. Or you can go back and pick up any one of these parts, and he'll agree to it all over again since he's already agreed to it. You do either of those things and change somebody's mind. Well, now let's walk back along the track of this concatenation of logic back to earlier premises and find out what are the earlier premises with which we can get immediate agreement and which by re-stimulating them we can get a resumption of higher abilities. And what are those? Well, those are CCH, communication, addedness, and control. Now, those three things are a necessary part of each person's experience, or they wouldn't be here. Now, they might or might not have some added parts. They might or might not have a bunch of other things. But for sure, these are well within the experience. And therefore, they can be handled and readjusted by an auditor. Therefore, he is not changing their mind. He can add to this bridge of communication, control, and addedness any new part he wishes. And he's liable to get anybody to accept it. Or he can re-stimulate any one of those three at will, and utilize it, desensitize it, and change the person rather remarkably for the better. Since these three factors are all smothered, they were all kingpins, they were all curative, they were all part of basic games, they're common to all games, and therefore have enormous power. And because they have had such power, they have been overburdened by evaluation, invalidation. And the things which have been added to control, communication, and addedness, whichever order you wish to put them in, the things which have been added to those have been added to them normally on a games basis. A person agreed on the subject of addedness, and somebody added something to addedness so as to make it detrimental. A person has agreed on the subject of communication, so somebody added something to communication to make it detrimental. Now, such an additive is, it adds as his mass. Yeah, that's an additive, but people agreed to it because it was pursuant to this other logical pattern. Control. Well, control is bad. Yes, control is very bad. In the society today, you see on every hand how bad control is. It's quite interesting that these being kingpins, the very supports of this bridge, have been all but obliterated. Now, if you take the three main parts necessary to get somebody into this universe and then deny him those three parts, he certainly won't get out. He will certainly become quite subordinate. And man is so afraid that he believes that he will become quite insubordinate if you bettered any of these parts. It's not true that he would. Now also, man has been led to believe that if he really touched the cornerstones of his old mind, the whole structure would collapse. And it's very dangerous. And anything powerful enough to undo the human psyche would be powerful enough to drive it mad. And I'm here to tell you today that the most powerful processes that we know are relatively easy to apply and do not lead the preclair into any revolt or upset. But we do know some processes which are quite far and out and beyond, which are apparently quite mild, which do practically spin a preclair in. We do know some. Quite interesting. They're very complicated processes. They're bad processes. Conceive a static. Bad process. Communication, control, and happiness with a proper application will not unsettle or unseat anybody's mind and are actually the easiest processes to apply for an auditor. And these are the key processes. Get too much mass away from him. Well, then he dies, and the process of dying. Apply for an auditor. And these are the key processes. So we even found out a lie, and that was that if you tried to change anybody's mind or alter anybody's mind, it was very risky. And we find that the real things which alter a person's mind are so easy to apply that they constitute less risk than many borderline, apparently innocuous processes. Now, the worst process that has ever been offered to man, I'm sorry to have to say this, because he was a great guy, was offered by a fellow named Gautama Siddhartha Sakyamuni. And he said, conceive mind essence. That was all you had to do, and that is conceive a static. And we know it doesn't work. There were people told to sit around and contemplate the spirituality of things, the spiritual nature of things, and so forth, as a process, they're being condemned to almost perpetual entrapment. They're being asked to look at something at which they have never looked. They're being asked to run something out which they never ran in. The easiness of life is life. And life has never viewed it. And doesn't seem to be able to. And a great impossibility has been stated there in 625 BC. But right along with it, there was so much wisdom, so much sincerity, so many things, that an entire civilization sprang from that man's mind and hands. The only civilization Asia knows to this day came immediately from the work which this man did. There just isn't any other. Well, this tells you then that even the lousiest process we know, applied with sincerity, was better than no process at all. So, what criticism of the auditor, if you please? Any auditing. Even bad auditing is better than no auditing. This we have to know. Why? It makes an increased awareness. And any time you increase anybody's awareness, you increase his ability. An arthritic who has been driven down into apathy by bad applications of this and that, is without his pain. But somebody else comes along, runs a little better process on him, and brings him back up into screaming pain. Oddly enough, that's better than being in apathy. Quite remarkable. Quite remarkable. Any auditing is better than no auditing, and any thought along this line is better than no thought at all. The true donkeys and ignoramuses of this time are those who stand around and talk about the invasion of privacy in the mind, and how you shouldn't think about it, and it's quite a dangerous subject, and how awful it is, and how you could spin somebody in with these things, and so forth. Oh, see here. You mean to say it's supposed to be a total hands-off? Let me call to your attention that this is a cancellation of communication, which is the first therapeutic action on the track. And somebody is simply trying to cancel communication with a large subject. And if we could do that thoroughly, and if that operation were to be permitted across the boards, then we would discover that all were trapped into slavery. And what nation do we find forbidding communication with the mind by the masses? That nation is Russia. What is the greatest slave master on earth today? That nation is Russia. Who holds on to prisoners of war long after other civilized nations release them? Russia. Fascinating. All these are coordinated data. They say no communication on the subject of the mind, if you please. They've even dramatized it on us in Dianetics. It doesn't matter what you think about the mind. It doesn't matter whether you think rightly or wrongly or upside down. That's at least communication. So there's a greater sin than being a squirrel. And that's not being anything. All right. Now what, out of all this, do we find of vast interest today? We find that those processes which contain the elements, all the elements, of communication, handiness, control, and a gains condition, total effect on others, no effect on self. In other words, you run it on the overt act motivator sequence, overt act side. You always run a preacher on overt acts, nothing but overt acts. You never run him on a motivator. Don't ever hint that he has ever had anything happen to him. He is the fellow who has done it. This is natural. This isn't really peculiar at all, since you're running him on a total outflow. You're running him on total communication. You're running overt acts. You're just running them on communication, 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 communication. And when you're running them on motivators, you're running them on no communication, no communication, no communication, no communication. You get the idea? And you violate at once communication when you run motivators. Oh, you poor victim, what has been done to you? Well, we'll fix you up. We'll fix you up, Mr. Jones. Don't worry, Mrs. Jones. Your husband's psychotic fits of temper will be cured soon. Now come over here, Mr. Jones, and lie down on this electric shock table and put the electrodes here. Mr. Jones made $15,000 a year in the advertising business after the time he got that electric shock. And after that, he was a very pleasant man to be around. He never said anything, but he was the janitor. Why? Well, the first fundamental of all therapy has been violated. Communication. Now, if you just ran processes on communication, 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 as an outflow from a thing. Now you win all the way, even though he conks off and practically spins in for lack of havingness. You understand that? There is nothing really wrong having somebody fold up unconscious on the floor and have to be dragged away and put in bed to sleep it off. He's been run and run and run, and his havingness has gone by the boards. And is totally exhausted, and he goes unconscious, and he can't wiggle anymore. Well, if you didn't run him on any motivators, and you ran him on total overts, that was communication. If it really was communication, 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 the exhaustion of that havingness will be replaced by a little rest and dying. You'll feel better. It's quite remarkable. All right. What's this thing called having? This thing called having, this is simply mass. When you observe the various characteristics of mass, you'll find the characteristics of mass or what are famous considerations of mass. Mass is mass. Mass is what you look at. Space is what you look through. You have mass, and you have the idea of quantity when you have mass. You have the idea of amount of mass. And you probably do not have, which we're still discussing, quantity of space at all. Space probably is not even vaguely quantitative. It's merely a quality. It's on the basis that it could be an infinite number of locations in any given space, large or small. You have to enter mass to have that number become finite. So on this basis, we discover that things are large or big or small or infinitesimal just to the degree that an individual considers they are, but as the mass seems to be. We have the whole problem of anchor points and all the rest of it. We could probably neglect to a large degree space in processing. We can't neglect mass. This is awfully important. But why? But by the communication formula itself, a thing cannot communicate with mass. He isn't mass. And the mass is mass. Well, most Thetans go around mocked up. That makes him a mass. So he, if he's mocked up, he's a mass, and he communicates with mass, and mass is mass. Now, the only thing he doesn't like about mass is not enough of it. This is fantastic, and this is something that you yourself will have to get a subjective reality upon before you can actually swallow it. The only thing wrong with any mass, regardless of its significance, condition, or anything else, is that there's not enough of it. People object to those things that there are not enough of. What is an objection? An objection is a consideration that there's not enough of. Well, why do people object to this creature? They just don't see any. There's nothing around. As the plumbing gets better, aberrations about it become worse. You didn't find anybody in a French town of some hundreds of years ago getting worried about excretia. There was sure enough of it around. Open sewers. But now it's breeding dreadful, deadly diseases. Well, you say, well, how about cops? Well, there aren't enough cops. You hear all the time about cops, but you certainly don't see any. There are very few cops. In any given day, you don't see more than one or two cops. It's fantastic. There just aren't many cops around. Now, you get the idea that a certain amount of mass is necessary to be a mass or to be. In other words, something has to have enough mass to be that mass. How big should a car be? Well, an American believes that a car should be of such and such a size. An Englishman believes it should be another size. But that is enough mass. But that's by consideration. An American car parked in a European garage looms up and overawes all of the road lice in there. But they tell you, instead of saying, my, isn't that a fine, beautiful Ford? Not twice as big as their limousines. That's for sure. And instead of saying that, they say, why do you make those cars so awfully big? It's huge. You don't need that much. They're protesting. Their idea of the amount of mass has been violated. You got that? So how much mass is mass? Well, enough mass is mass is mass, you see? I mean, that's as much mass as there is. So if you have an idea there should be cops everywhere, and there aren't cops anywhere, your idea of mass has been violated. Dragnet gives you to believe that cops are everywhere all the time, and things do all day long is talk in a monotonous jack-webbed tone of voice to a couple of plainclothesmen. That's what you do all day long. That's what life is, according to TV. And there just isn't that much crime, and there just isn't that much Jack Webb. There just isn't. And if you get robbed, you won't have anybody coming around in the plainclothes squad asking you very many questions. Even if they find out your wallet back, they'd probably forget who it belonged to. There isn't very much law. There's much people on payrolls. But this whole idea of crime stems out of the cowboy in the black hat. He's got to manufacture crime. I don't know what Dick Tracy would do if he ever ran out of villains. It's villains that make that strip. Nothing but villains. And he's got far more criminals in that strip than there have been in America today. I mean, he's really good. But so it is with fiction. You have all these villains. Well, there are lots of villains around, but they aren't that villainous. Well, with these ideas of mass, how much mass should mass constitute? And other considerations like this, and they're individualized considerations. We don't care about those. What we're interested in is that everybody has a consideration regarding mass. That is held in common with one and all. That there should be some mass. Some mass. You say, how much money is money? Well, one person, it's 5 cents, and another person, it's $50, and so forth, but they both believe in money. But societies can cease to believe in money very easily. And they have often in the past, the black dogs that were shipped to America, Louisiana, by the Sun King of France in kegs. They're made out of lead nickel. They call them black dogs. Sus Marques. They were worthless. Because they wouldn't buy anything. There was no produce in the country to buy in the first place. And people ceased to believe in it. They just ceased to consider the money. They had the picture of the king on it and everything else, but they just did not consider it money. Well, they can fall out of a belief in money, but they never fall out of a belief in mass. Now, mass will annoy a Thetan, and he can have mass forced upon him, and he can have his considerations about mass rearranged by masses and the actions of some other life form, but he still believes in mass. This is peculiar. I say it's peculiar. You should regard it as such, because you too, listening to me, also believe in mass. Not fanaticism, which is wonderful. You also believe in the effort connected with mass. But less so than the generality of mass itself. The idea of effort varies considerably, much more than the idea of mass. There are people around who cannot even consider effort, and therefore somehow or another get away with handling mass. They're just in an apathy about it at all. It's not a commonly held belief, then, to the degree that mass is a commonly held belief. All right. If they got that way at all, they got that way through the mismanagements, mishandlings, and the communication deals, and the right handlings of masses. The playing field. Mass. We don't care whether it had weight or didn't have weight or anything of the sort. It was a fundamental of the communication formula. You talked to the mass, somebody else was connected with the mass, so therefore he heard you. You got it? So mass was believed in as a necessary via in all communication. Now maybe it isn't a necessary via in all communication. But according to life, as it is, it believes so. And maybe if you kill that, change that off, or ran that belief out, maybe Thetans would be talking straightly to Thetans, you understand. But they have not had that consideration to this time. The consideration is that a mass is necessary as a via. And so that you can differentiate which terminal is talking, you have to have two masses. Therefore, we get datum of comparable magnitude, mass of comparable magnitude, and we get a two-unit universe. See by maximum geometry, if you're very curious about this. What Minister Fuller's creation. Now, mass, then, is in common with communication. And a person feels that if he doesn't have a certain amount of mass, or doesn't have a certain amount of weight to mass, then he can't communicate. So we have communication being influenced directly by mass, and we have this happening in every life form that you will be in communication with, which is very important to you. Now, if you're going to communicate with something, you have to be able to position it. and you have to change its position. Otherwise, communication would always be the same. You'd have no variation, you'd have no time. So we have stop, change, and start as necessary considerations with regard to the mass. And if you have that, if those three things exist, a thing must have some execution of them. And the execution of start, change, and stop is control. We have all these things together, and we have a very, very, very broad, workable, highly generalized answer to the mind. A thing with persisting is the only outlying datum. He does persist. He is infinite. And we have the fact of time. But if we have control, we must have time. So time and survival are understood factors. Survival, and the whole idea of survival, of course, is subordinate to time. Now, you should understand, then, that where processes fall outside of survival, communication, happiness, withdrawal, and gains conditions, they don't work. And I'm here to tell you rather bluntly that this has been my experience. And I'm perfectly prepared to have it unbe my experience, but to this time, it is my experience. And to that degree, having been at this longer than you, this makes you in this unit stuck. But at any time, your subjective reality is exceeded. Look at these data. And if you find something beyond them, wonderful. Be very, very happy to hear about it. Well, what does this make? This makes the change of mass, the stopping of mass, the starting of mass, communication with mass, all of them workable, usable processes. The Summer Research Project recently undertaken and just now pretty well compiled tells us that HC is the all-time favorite everywhere. All through the auditors of numerous nations. HC. Why? It has communication with the mass, and it has control of the BC. And HC doesn't work in the absence of control. And it doesn't work where the individual cannot conceive the wall of the mass. And today we just changed that. And we have the one of the postulates which goes with control. And that postulate is ought to be. And that is simply the change of control. You understand? That is simply the change of control. It's no more mysterious than that. And that ought to be process carries with it all the limitations that control itself carries. Change has certain limitations in running. If you run stop CS on somebody and you run the change part of it very long, then you're going to have to run the stop for sure. In other words, ought to be is simply the postulate that fits with change. And therefore, an HC type process, preferable, which holds things still, it keeps them from going away and makes them more solid, is unfortunately a necessary adjunct to an ought to be process. Balance ought to be, if anything, is more workable than personal ought to be. But what are we dealing with here? When we run too many valences, we're running an inflow, not an outflow. I'm fading with a fading cause point. Tell me how that mother thinks that chair ought to be. It has workability, there's no doubt about this. Nevertheless, tends to be more of an inflow than asking the preacher how the chair ought to be. The more important in this is change. Therefore, it is unbalanced, since start and particularly stop are not utilized in running it. Therefore, if you run change, just as we've discovered many times, you better run stop. At least run stop. Now, there are many things that could be said in consideration of all these things, but the primary gain is the most important, and this is the denial of havingness to the other person. That is the way we punish the cowboy in the black hat. We deny him havingness. And when we unsuccessfully deny him havingness, it's liable to snap in on us, at which time we deny ourselves havingness, and that is the dwindling spiral. No more important than that. Denial of havingness and ought to be is simply a mechanism by which you deny somebody else havingness. He drives up in a new car. He said, look at my brand new car. He's got a car. Now you tell him it ought to be this, it ought to be that, it ought to be this, and listen to that gear shift, and that ought to be something else, and he doesn't have a car. It's a way of denying people havingness. So therefore, we can summarize and say that easily 75% of the various processes and mechanisms known in Dianetics and Scientology are all embraced under the heading denial of havingness. And all the processes of Dianetics and Scientology which have had workability or unworkability have been totally embraced under communication, havingness, control, survive, and gains condition. Now, that is a summary. You will find that there are thousands of ways that they make something else be still. Make it solid is one of them, and an important one. There are thousands and thousands and thousands, billions possibly, of ways by which a Thetan denies other Thetans havingness. Ought to be is an important one of them. That process is the most powerful process which runs out all other processes. So therefore, denial of havingness run with communication, control, and a gains condition. Thereby, any way that it could be run becomes the common denominator process of all processes there are. If you have that process which processed all processes out, you would have the process which was the fundamental of all processes, right? Well, that's what I have to tell you on a summary of processes this 11th day of March, 1957. Thank you all.